Welcome to Hype episode 118. Oh my goodness. It's been a long time since I've said that. This is a flagship podcast from hyperboard.com and I'm Marima and I am here with Pam.
Hello.
And it's just the two of us today, unfortunately. Everyone go and send great thoughts and best wishes and lots of love to Selena. She's been a little sick. But Pam and I are going to hold down the fort. So, you know, I think we can manage. Can we remember how to do this without her?
Well, one can only hope. If not, it's going to be an interesting show.
Right. We'll see how this train wreck progresses. Okay, we have a lot of news to talk about. Of course, we have some very big Harry Potter news and a lot of other stuff. Oh my God, I finished The Crown. That's a teaser for the TV section. I am very excited to talk about it. But before we do that, we are going to talk about what we've been up to. If you want to let us know what you've been up to, of course, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. We are at HyperbleHype. We are at HyperbleHype on Instagram. And you can send us an email, hype@hyperbole.com. So Pam, what have you been doing? How have you been hyping?
Well, as always, I've been hyping by listening to music. But I'm so behind on my new releases that I just got around to listening to Solange's A Seat at the Table. Have you listened to this album? I feel like you would love it.
Oh, I have not, but I would definitely check it out.
Yes. So for those of you that don't know, I feel like you might have been living under a rock if you don't. Solange Knowles is Beyonce's little sister, and she's an artist as well in her own right. This album is very much R&B, but it is like, it's so beautiful. I shudder to talk about favorite tracks because I really think that this is an album that you need to listen through from start to finish. Like, don't put it on shuffle, just like listen to it, because she just does a wonderful, wonderful job of weaving this tale of what it means to be Black and what it means to be a Black woman living in America right now. It's just absolutely stunning, very much a work of art. And one of my favorite parts about this album is she's got these musical interludes that are really, really lovely. And it's basically just, you know, people that are speaking over some soft ambient music. She's got like Master P doing one. But one of my favorite ones she actually did with her mother, it's called Tina Taught Me. And she talks about what it means to have Black pride versus what it means to be anti-white. And it's just a lot of this record is very, very profound. So I would consider it required listening. And I think that it'll really open your eyes to just kind of how a good portion of America and a good, you know, kind of just sees the world and like lives in the world that we live in right now. If I had to pick two favorite tracks, it'd probably be Mad, which also features Lil Wayne. And I also really like Don't Touch My Hair. But like I said, you would actually, you should probably listen to the whole thing and just expand your mind and be educated and bask in the gloriousness. It's really wonderful.
Oh, that sounds great. Okay, I will definitely check it out because I totally trust your music judgment, but also that sounds like the kind of amazing, like a Black feminist thing that we should all be experiencing. So I'm so down for that. I have been reading. So randomly, I don't know what it is about America, but for some reason when I'm here, I always read Rick Riordan books. I think because they're really easy to kind of get through. When I was here a few years ago, I read the entire Percy Jackson and what's the sequel to that? Heroes of Olympus, I think is what the sequel is called. Those entire, like, I think that's 10 books just on the course of like being on planes and commuting and stuff like that. And so I just read kind of on a whim. I was like, surely he must have a new book out. I wonder, you know, what he's up to these days. So I read the first book in his Trials of Apollo series, which is called The Hidden Oracle. It came out in May, so I'm a little behind the times, but you know, hey, I'm catching up. And this is the first book in the series. So basically the premise is the god Apollo, who has appeared in the Percy Jackson series multiple times and is kind of this sort of, no, it's like this kind of frat boy type. It's like a poet, and you know, you can sort of imagine in Rick Riordan's interpretation how the sun god might appear. He's been made mortal by his father Zeus, and he's sent to New York, and he doesn't have any powers, and he like has to deal with that, and you know, he doesn't deal with that all too well, as we might expect. You know, it was fun. His book's very, yeah, they're very cute, and it's a lot of pop culture references, and it's a lot of kind of in joke about like mythology and stuff like that, which as someone who did ancient history once upon a time, I do appreciate. I kind of enjoyed it, and you know, I'll be interested to see where the series goes, although it's weird for me because I don't think I've ever waited. I'm trying to remember, I don't think I've ever waited for a book of his before. Like, I think I've always read the series after they've been finished, although I may have had to wait for the last book in the Heroes of Olympus series. I actually cannot remember. But I like that. Have you read any of his books? Have you read the Percy Jackson books or anything?
I have not. They always come highly recommended by people that I trust, to recommend me books. But also because they just seem like they're right up my alley. I just haven't gotten around to them. And an unpopular opinion, I really like the movies.
Oh, I've only seen the first movie.
But I know they're not like indicative of what happens in the book because they've changed so much. But I love Logan Lerman, so basically I'll just watch anything he's in.
Right. I'm with you on that. I actually can't remember the movie at all, though I do remember people were very frustrated about it. So I'm sure someone can like send us a scene by scene breakdown of, you know, what was wrong with the movie.
Also, I'm so sorry if I've offended you by saying that, but remember, I have not read the books, so.
Oh, no, totally fine. I really liked it. So anyway, I would recommend that. And then the other thing that I'm currently reading is a little different than, I guess, Rick Riordan, but I'm reading David Sedaris's last book of essays, which is Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls. And it's just a book of essays. They're very, very funny. He's a humorist and an essayist. And I've read many of his other essay collections, and I love to read his pieces in The New Yorker. So that's, you know, something different. If people are looking for something, I embarrass myself, you know, basically every time I've opened it, I've been in a public place, like in a coffee shop or on a train or something. And every time I embarrass myself laughing at it. So, you know, that's a good sign. But yeah, that's, you know, that's what I've been up to. So something different, some music and some books. Let's jump right into the news. Of course, we can't go any further without talking about the hugest, the biggest, the most shocking news story of the week, which is, I don't even know how I feel about this. J.K. Rowling has confirmed that Fantastic Beasts is going to be a 5-part film series. And yes, she's writing the script for all of them. And that's kind of all we know right now. So this news broke earlier this week. It was announced at the sort of fan event. We're going to talk about some other Fantastic Beasts news in a second. But first of all, Pam, like, how are you feeling about this? Is this good or bad? Or is it, do you just feel confused? I feel a little confused.
I feel cautiously optimistic, but I understand now how, you know, we were talking a couple of weeks ago how we might be seeing this lead up to either Grindelwald's demise or like the beginning of that first major war in the wizarding world. And now that we know she's got 5 movies to play around with that, I feel like that timeline going from like 1926 to 1946 makes a lot more sense.
I get that. We asked you guys on Twitter what you thought of it. I'm just going to read through some of the tweets because I think it's interesting to get sort of a scope of reactions. So Leah said, I think I'll wait to judge until I see the first movie because right now I don't know what plot they could use for 5 movies. The Lady Ash said, the Fantastic Beasts news still feels surreal. Like, really? So much more of the magical world as long as Joe writes all the movie scripts. And she's got the little heart eye emojis there. So I think she's on board. Mariah Lovegood says, agreed. As long as Joe writes them all, I'm sure that would be fantastic. And I'm excited to see the story unfold. And Kieran said, I thought having 3 was enough, but I trust Rowling has a solid plan for 5 amazing movies. So I'm okay with it. So it seems like everyone's really on board with this.
I think that people that are cautious or worried, I think they might be trying to pigeonhole it too much into this idea that it has to revolve around Fantastic Beasts. And if you think about 5 movies of just like Newt Scamander basically trying to catch them all, so to speak, like it doesn't really sound like something you'd want to sit through 5 movies for. But if you think about it in the grander scheme of things and what he could potentially be involved in, I think it has the potential to be really exciting and great. But it's just one of those things where we're going to have to see how the story unfolds. And I think by the end of the first movie, when we all walk out of the theater, we'll have a better idea as to where this is all leading.
Yeah, it's true. It is really, really hard to judge, and I kind of feel bad. I guess, you know, I do have some misgiving. I'm so torn about this. I am really excited for Fantastic Beasts, and I really go back and forth. I know I must sound very hypocritical on this, because I'm like, I love this. Oh, I'm very concerned about this. And I keep like going back and forth against myself. But I really am excited for this. And I guess I'm excited for the potential of what it could be, what this series could be, and kind of the things that it would deal with. And then like, there've just been some missteps that I sort of can't shake, which I've discussed in great detail, so I won't bore everyone with that. But you know, we did get a new sizzle reel, which also came out from this, this event. And this, I guess, is kind of our first proper look at what this film could be about. We start getting more of the plot. So we find out, that Newt basically gets to New York, the Beast escape from the case, he's arrested immediately. And then the plot, as we, I suppose, had kind of worked out from some of the other promotional material, is not so much about, as you said, like, gotta catch them all, but about really looking at this divide between the magical world and the non-magical world. And this is some of the stuff we were talking about on our last episode, actually, about like how they're going to deal with that. And about Grindelwald, really. But I don't know, again, like I'm such a broken record on this. Like, part of this footage looks great and is really, really interesting to me. And then part of it just feels like, I don't know, something about it just makes me vaguely uncomfortable or unsure. Like, the start of it, they really, really trying to tie it to Harry Potter. You know, and J.K. Rowling is interviewed throughout this, and she says, you know, we tie it to Harry Potter in really interesting ways. I think, like, people are going to find this really surprising. And part of that worries me, because I don't want to watch, like, a prequel, as it were, to the Harry Potter films, which I did not enjoy. Like, so that's one issue is, how does this fit into the world? Is this a prequel to the books or to the films? Because they're different. Like, the canon is different. So that is a question I have.
That's understandable, because you know, the thing about that is that I understand why they feel the need to tie it so deeply to Harry Potter. But at the same time, it is kind of a shame that they're under the impression, basically, that they don't feel like this could stand on its own without all of this tie-in. And I think that that's really sad, because if you don't need it, it's a really nice, like, exciting, thrilling moment for a fan to hit play on this and hear things like very young Daniel Radcliffe saying, "I'm a what?" And, you know, you hear Michael Gambon talking about memories and going back and things like that. Like, that's exciting as a fan, but at the same time, like, you don't need that to kind of present this movie that has got an incredible amount of star power and just looks interesting on its own. I feel like people would still go see it. And even if they didn't, like, tie, like, if a casual moviegoer didn't realize it was part of the Harry Potter universe, they could realize it on their own later, or somebody else would probably, like, cue them into that fact. But it is kind of a shame that they feel the need to market it this way, because I think it could stand on its own just fine.
Yeah, I think really all they need to do is be like, from J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World, you know, blah, blah, blah. And everyone know, like, J.K. Rowling is synonymous with Harry Potter at this point, despite some attempts on her part to perhaps separate herself. That's just how it goes. So anyway, you know, it's a small issue, and I'm sure it's a thing that they're doing particularly for the first film, and we'll see how it goes. But I don't know. I just don't know what this feeling is. And I kind of wonder if there is anyone else, especially because all of the tweets we got from you guys, everyone's really excited about it. And I wonder if there's anyone else who has this. It's not even like a feeling of, it's just kind of, I don't know, something I can't really shake. There's just like a shadow over my excitement for this. And I don't know what that's about, but I think maybe it does have to do with, like, I kind of wish Selena was here, because I wonder if she would get this more. But, like, Selena and I have talked before, we really, really did not like the films and really did not like the changes and sort of the way that the world was conceived of in those films. And, you know, I just didn't like it. And so the more they connect these to those films that I did not feel myself captured the world that I loved, the more I'm like uneasy about it, if that makes sense. And yet I know that they have to do this. Like I completely understand why they're doing it. And I don't even begrudge them doing it, but like, I wish that they wouldn't, if that makes sense.
No, it's understandable because, you know, you already have like kind of your feelings set about the Harry Potter movies. I think it might help if you consider them a separate entity, but at the same time, it's very hard to do that when they keep shoving the fact that these stories are somehow linked to Harry's story. Like when they keep shoving that down your throat, it's hard for you to separate them. But I don't know. It's like, it's one of those things where it's like, I can't even think of anything that I could say to console you, except for the fact that maybe when you see the movie, like it'll be different. But I think that it's okay to go into this like cautiously. Cautiously, just going into it cautiously. I think that that's fine because at the end of the day, this is J.K. Rowling expanding on a world that you've already fallen in love with through like the written world. So I think as a fan, it's all right if you're worried about how it's going to turn out, because this is still somebody playing with this, the idea of this place that you hold so dear.
Yeah, I totally get that. I think that was, yes, that was very nicely articulated. Okay, and one final piece of Fantastic Beasts news before we move on, because wow, there was a lot of Fantastic Beasts this week. So we got all the character posters, and we got a new synopsis, and I'm not going to read the whole synopsis. You guys can head over to Hypervore to do that because it's a little long. But it really emphasizes Grindelwald. And we start to see, like, it seems like Grindelwald's going to be a big part of this. And I don't know. Did you have a chance to look at these posters? I'm actually just looking at them for the first time now. So this is fun.
Yeah, I think that the thing I love about these posters, I mean, they used to do these all the time for Harry Potter, obviously, but there's so much detail in the background that you really can take a couple of minutes to take a look at what's behind everybody. I also really like that they've given everybody a title, so you kind of get to know these people a little bit more before you head into the film. So that's kind of cool. Like they they say like Queenie's Legilimens and things like that. I think a lot of people were really, really excited about Graves having this Deathly Hallows necklace kind of floating towards the top.
Yeah.
And, everybody was kind of theorizing about what that could mean. Although I just like, after I saw that, I was like, I wonder, this must be like the death, like the dark mark of Grindelwald, right? Like instead of tattooing his followers, everybody has this necklace. And that's how you know if you're really like in with the crowd.
I guess so. I mean, we know that it was his symbol, but at the same time, like it is also the symbol of the Deathly Hallows. So I think he's definitely connected in some way to Grindelwald, but like there is the chance that they've both come to this independently, you know, like that Graves is also like someone who's on the quest for the Hallows, whatever. But anyway, it's, yeah, I think we have an email about this, so we'll talk about this a little more in the listener feedback and how Grindelwald might sort of fit into all of this. But yeah, we could talk about this probably forever. We could like break down this whole synopsis, but we do have some other some other news to get to. So we would love to hear what you guys think about all of this. I would really love if there's anyone who can back me up on my feelings and let us know which poster you like the best, because I am literally looking at these for the first time and they are beautiful, and I want to hear about all the details that, you know, I'm sure you have all spotted in the backgrounds, because y'all are very perceptive. So you can just do some legwork for us, because I'm being very lazy. And I would like to know kind of what we've spotted in there.
Well, Harry Potter is not the only fandom that had a big week. Big, big, big week for Star Wars fans, because we did get a new trailer for Star Wars Rogue One. It is so great. This trailer gives me chills, Marima. I don't know what you thought, but I think it's just so wonderful. We get a great look at Jin's background and kind of a little bit more information as to why she's kind of on the outskirts. We learn a little bit more about her father and the fact that he was employed to build the Death Star, and that's why she is starting off in this like jail cell and things like that. There's a great line in there as well that kind of makes reference to Star Wars A New Hope. She says that we have hope, rebellions are built on hope. And we also get a great look at Darth Vader. So this trailer really has a little bit of everything. And I think it's doing a great job of pumping everybody up for this movie, which does come out in December. So we're very, very close to this release. What did you think about this? Did this excite you?
Oh my God, yes. Yes, it excited me for so many reasons. But actually, I just thought of something. As we were just talking about Fantastic Beasts, I feel like what they're doing with Star Wars, with these anthology movies, what they've done with Rogue One, is like the way that I wish they had approached Fantastic Beasts in a way. Like, you know, there are little hints of how it connects in. Obviously, the story majorly connects into the first trilogy, but we get just really little hints in a couple of things they say in the trailer and in a little bit of the music, but they're really letting this stand alone as its own film, even though in a way it's a more direct prequel to the events that we've already seen than Fantastic Beasts is. And I think that's great. They're just letting it stand behind the Star Wars brand. And it seems like, you know, in a way it's like a really confident trailer. I felt they are really presenting like these new characters. They're not giving us, because this is the first one. I mean, Force Awakens, you know, we had Harrison Ford, like we had Chewie, we had Leia, we had the hint of Luke Skywalker, you know, we had all of these connections, all of these things to bring people back. And I feel like with Rogue One, they're really letting it stand on its own. And I appreciate that. I don't know how you feel about that. I mean, we're both pretty big Star Wars fans, but I think it was definitely much more part of your childhood than mine. So do you feel like this connects enough for you, or does it feel the same? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've joked about this before, but I always say that I grew up on Endor because they filmed a lot of those Endor scenes out here in Northern California. And by those scenes, I mean, like, basically in my backyard, which is always a fun little side fact. And of course, like, Star Wars is so ingrained into Marin County and San Francisco and stuff like that because George Lucas is... he's not local, but he basically is local now. He's lived here for so long. But yeah, I think that like for me, for something to really be a touchstone in terms of like things that I've enjoyed growing up, it really just has to have like not necessarily the feel, which this does. It does have the tone and the feel of a Star Wars movie, but it's just enough to see like friggin' stormtroopers. If I'm going to say, you know, like that's enough for me to be like, oh, it's a Star Wars movie. And going back to what we were talking about with Harry Potter, it's like, I don't think like it, you know, it doesn't need much more than like, this is magic and like maybe one reference of like Dumbledore for you to like be transported back into that world. But to the topic at hand, I think that you're right. This trailer does a great job of kind of reminding you that it is going to be setting up the events that you already know, but it puts much more of an emphasis on these new players that we're going to see. I'm so, so excited to see Diego Luna and Felicity Jones kind of do their thing on this. I'm so obsessed with them as actors, and everybody just looks so great. The world they've created looks so great. The story looks really compelling. I'm so, so, so excited.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I would add to it that what I like about what they're doing with these new films is that every film looks a little different. You know, this definitely has a different visual look, although it matches in the style of Star Wars films. Visually, it looks different in the locations that they've chosen and everything to what we've seen before. And I like that. Like, they're expanding the world for us rather than, you know, just doing the same thing over and over again. And again, I think that's like a confidence thing of really standing behind what they've produced. And, you know, it's really exciting to just look at this poster and see this really diverse group of actors. Obviously, it would be super great for there to be another woman on there, but at least Felicity Jones's face is like five times bigger than everyone else's. I'm very, very excited for this. I fully re-embraced my love of Star Wars recently, and I don't know. I'm really on board for these films. I think they did such a great job with A Force Awakens. So what is there to be worried about, you know?
Well, knock on wood for good measure, but yes, I totally agree with you. Like, I'm expecting greatness, and I'm almost positive we're going to get greatness. So that's always good.
Yeah. All right. Well, somewhere else where we're getting great things is staying with Disney for a minute, their Mulan movie. So First of all, I was totally joking last week when we were like, oh, they're casting Chinese Mulan, that's great. Wouldn't it be hilarious if all the other characters were white? And they were like, but we gave you Chinese Mulan, so, like, what are you complaining about? Turns out maybe a little too on the nose, because there was a report basically the next day after that. I think it even came out before the episode went online, so it was, we just missed it, that in the original script for Mulan, they were going to have a white male lead, and not just a white male lead, but like a super racist white male lead. And there was this whole campaign online, hashtag make Mulan right, subtext being not white. And we've since had confirmation that apparently that was just an early script that was a jumping off point. And that all of the characters are going to be, well, the primary characters, including the love interest, are going to be Chinese. So that is great. That campaign and sort of where it came from definitely had me worried for a bit. But now we're getting some more details about it. So first of all, we're getting two Mulan movies, because these things always go together. So we had two Snow Whites, we're having two Jungle Books, now we're getting two Mulans. Sony and Disney are both creating their own versions of Mulan's tale. Of course, it's based on a Chinese legend, so, you know, understandable. Disney's is going to be based on their animated classic, their animated feature. And Sony is just doing their own take on it, I guess, because, you know, they only have half of Spider-Man now, so they're running out of properties. And now we're hearing talk that both films are hoping to have Asian directors. So that's good. But so far we don't know who, because they asked Ang Lee and he said no. So we'll wait and see.
I like how Ang Lee is laughing. The default.
Right.
It's like, oh, we need an Asian director. Laughing. Let's just go get Ang Lee.
I'm laughing over that. I'm also laughing over this article that Selena wrote, which is so sassy, where she just keeps referencing Matt Damon with, you know, the Great Wall and the very white, like, him being, anyway, that whole, like, whitewashing controversy, which she's referenced multiple times in this, which makes me laugh. But what do you think about this?
I think it's wonderful. I really hope this sets a precedent for what major studios can do in the future as far as making sure they don't whitewash things that should not be whitewashed. So I'm really excited to see how both of these progress. And I really hope that they stick to their word and actually do it.
Yeah, I think, in terms of the casting, you don't even understand like why it would be an issue in the first place, especially on Disney's one. They literally just need to make a live action version of the film that exists and everyone will love it because that film was a masterpiece and you don't need to change a thing, except to obviously create a new role for Ming-Na Wen to play.
I saw this, this tweet on Twitter that said that, it was like, I want Disney's Mulan to be 99% Chinese and the 1% is reserved for Eddie Murphy, who needs to come back as Mushu. And I was like, all God. Right, I'll take that.
Yeah, that is totally fair. But, you know, I think what's exciting about this is often we see people pushing for diversity in front of the camera without remembering, like, it also needs to be reflected behind the camera, and that the people who are directing or producing or, you know, contributing in all of those ways we don't necessarily see on screen are just as important at shaping like the narrative and the way that things are presented. And so if we can get people involved that, like, you know, reflect the stories that they're telling and reflect the characters that we're seeing, it can only be a good thing. And so I think exactly like you said, hopefully this sets a trend, hopefully this actually happens, hopefully they remember that, hey, there's other people other than Ang Lee.
Yeah. And hopefully they remember that there is always the option of a female Asian director.
Exactly. Which would be great. And, you know, this is one of those cases I often roll my eyes when they always seem to happen in Hollywood, that these things come in pairs. Like, there's so many examples in the recent years. I mean, you know, there's the 8,000 King Arthur movies that are on their way. That
and the that Two Little Mermaids.
Talk about. I know. Every single time. Like, I guess, you know, it's like happens with the rights and then they just come up. But if it's going to happen with, like, you know, animals, like Jungle Book, and it's going to happen with like 8,000 white princess movies, then it should damn well happen for Mulan. So I am totally on board for this. And as you guys can tell, we are quite invested in this. So we will keep you updated as we hear more.
So it's been a big week for Disney as well, because they've got another live action movie coming down the pipeline. They are getting set to adapt the classic tale of Don Quixote. I actually always thought that the full name of this book, by the way, side note, was Don Quixote de la Mancha, because that's what my grandmother always, like, this is like her favorite book. It's by a Spanish novelist named Miguel de Cervantes Saavedra, and it was published back in the 1600s. For those of you that don't know this tale, it actually follows the story of a man named Alonso Quijano, who is obsessed with tales of knights and chivalry, and he is kind of so obsessed that he begins to believe that these stories are actually real. So this should be a really fun tale to take on. There have been other adaptions before of Don Quixote and, like, kind of the story that Cervantes kind of has woven, but nothing in recent years that I can think of. So it'll be interesting to see how they go about doing this. The story was first reported by the Hollywood Reporter, who did emphasize that Disney was going to kind of run with this idea that the tale is a little bit whimsical and the character is a little bit eccentric, so it might have a bit of a Pirates of the Caribbean feel, which is interesting in and of itself. But other than that, it's in the very, very early stages of being produced. So we'll keep you updated on, you know, the ongoings in terms of this film. I don't know if you have you ever read Don Quixote? I've never read it. Like, my grandparents used to tell us, like, little things and stuff, but
I think I've read some of it, but I don't think I ever finished it. I don't know why.
Karen, who wrote this story up, points out that Wishbone did a Don Quixote tale. So I guess if you want, like, the child's version of this and you don't want to read the book necessarily, you can kind of go watch the family friendly situation. Wishbone. Oh my gosh, you don't know what Wishbone is? I feel like this happens all the time. So Wishbone was this, he's like a little Jack Russell Terrier. It used to be on, like, PBS over here.
What?
Wishbone is like this, he's a dog. And he
I need
would,
more details.
Wishbone is a dog, and he would kind of take you through, like literature and history and things like that. It's really cute. It was on PBS over here.
You should
look
adorable.
It up. I feel like you would really like it. Like, not a cartoon dog, like a real dog.
Okay. Well, that sounds hilarious. And I don't know why that wasn't emphasized more in the story. But yeah, this is, I don't know, Disney's really lining things up. I like the kind of the pirates theme. I feel like that could be fun. I really like those. I mean, now I feel like I can't like those films because Johnny Depp, but previously I have really enjoyed those films, and I think they do that kind of, you know, slightly whimsical vibe really well, obviously, because it's Disney. So that could be a fun way to kind of connect with the audience. And yeah, I'll be interested to see where this goes. And I'm very glad that you took this story, because your pronunciation has me in awe, and I would have butchered that. So I'm never saying any of these, the title or the author's name or anything to do with this ever again. Okay, and I think this is the last piece of, this has been Disney hype this week, our last piece of Disney news. We knew that, back to our live action adaptations, Disney is adapting Aladdin, and now we know that Guy Ritchie is gonna direct. So, I mean, I know how this is gonna work, but I also can't really see how Aladdin is gonna work, but, I really liked The Man from U.N.C.L.E., so I'm on board with this. And I know Guy Ritchie is, like, weirdly divisive as a director, which I guess some people really don't like his style, but I've always enjoyed his films. So,
I feel like
fine.
You're right, because Aladdin, I mean, he starts off as a street rat, right? He's He's like stealing to like make ends meet and stuff like that. And I feel like Guy Ritchie does a really good job with these like chase scenes and like movies and stuff like that. And because a lot,
right, like so, in Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So because Aladdin is like, there's so much like action, like he's a very active character. I feel like this might be a good fit. I'm into it.
Yeah, same. And I think he could do something really fun with this. And, you know, Aladdin, I have to say Aladdin, not one of my favorite Disney movies. So any change that they want to make to it, like, doesn't particularly bother me. But I would be wondering how people who, you know, really care feel about this. But yeah, I guess some people really don't like Guy Ritchie. So, which was not a thing I knew until I was, you know, just talking about my deep love of The Man from U.N.C.L.E., aka one of the best movies ever made. And someone was like, didn't Guy Ritchie make that? No, I hate it. I was like, no, it's amazing. It's a masterpiece of cinema. So yeah, we'll see. But I agree, actually, that's a great point. I think, all that chase stuff, he could do that really well. And also I think his films are just really interesting and really like highly stylized, obviously. And it'll be interesting to see that kind of take on Aladdin. And, you know, if we remember like some of the scenes from the movie, especially with the genie and all of that, like there is a great opportunity there to do some really stylized stuff and for it to really suit the kind of plot and the tone as well. And so I'll be interested to see how he sort of mixes it up. I think he has a lot of really good kind of tricks up his sleeve, you know, in his director's book or whatever that he could bring to this and make it really fun.
Yeah, and I know we've said this in the past. I think, you know, The Jungle Book really sold us on what live-action Disney movies could look like. So I will be interested to see how much they take from the animated classic that we all grew up with versus how much they interweave from the original tale of Aladdin as it was told in book form and stuff like that. So
yeah, exactly. And I know we've said this before, but like especially what really got me from The Jungle Book was the way they dealt with the humor in that. And I think, you know, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. especially has some really great scenes in there that, you know, it can be like a serious movie and still a little camp and can really work well together. So yeah, I feel good about this. I don't feel particularly strongly about Guy Ritchie one way or the other, but I've liked a lot of his films and I think this could be good. All right. And now one last piece of movie news before we move on. We found out that, Bad Moms, which was that film, with, Mila Kunis and Kristen Bell and Catherine Hahn, which I don't know if you saw this, I don't think you did, but I saw it and it was pretty funny. Apparently they, you know, we have way too many films about women, Pam, and films with like men behaving badly. That's really what we need to see on screen. So apparently we are going to get a gender swapped, spin-off, which is Bad Dads, because, you know, we don't have enough movies about men behaving like children. So that's cool. This is terrible news. This is like, I mean, is the weirdest, most unnecessary piece of news.
I thought this was a joke when I saw it. I really did.
Yeah, me too.
Because I thought to myself, surely this movie has been done before, this Bad Dads situation.
It's like literally every movie, right? Almost.
All right, Hollywood, whatever you say.
Right, like, you know, when Bridesmaids came out, as Selena notes in this article, when Bridesmaids came out, like, the whole point of that was to take women and put them in the role that's usually reserved for men to behave really badly and do this kind of really raunchy comedy and this sort of unapologetically explicit, like in your face, you know, not necessarily pretty, like not like sexy comedy or like haha, like chick flick comedy or whatever in the way that women have often been restricted to, but just to be really like, no, like this could be really offensive. And this is just that kind of humor that we've seen in The Hangover and we've seen in like basically every like bro movie ever made. And you know, since then, since Bridesmaids, like there's been a whole bunch of movies in this kind of genre. There was Sisters that also came out, I think that was this year, with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. And then of course Bad Moms is the most recent. And it made a whole lot of money. So, you know, it's understandable why they want to kind of capitalize on that. But I just don't understand, like, what the appeal of this is. And what, you know, bad dads, like, again, literally every movie with a male, like, with a father figure in it or whatever, if it focuses on him and his child or whatever, is often this, like, stereotype of, oh, like, I'm a bad father. Like, the mother has to do everything, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I just think this seems so unnecessary. And also, apparently they are planning this to be a series of film spin-offs, a reality television show, short form digital content, and a robust consumer products program. So I guess we're getting the real bad moms and the real bad dads or something on reality TV. And I don't know, where do you go after you've had bad moms and bad dads? Like, bad grandmas, bad babysitters.
There was already a bad grandpa.
Oh, so true. Well, I mean, there's already been a bad dad. It was called, like, every movie ever made about men. So that hasn't stopped them so far.
You know
far.
What? Why don't they make we'll a movie see. Called Good Dads?
Right. Wouldn't that be great? Yeah, I would watch that. Hey, like, we share the parenting duties with our wives. That's the whole movie. I mean, the thing about this is, and, like, we'll move on, is just it's incredibly frustrating when it's so rare to get women in these kinds of films, or just women in, like, you know, you can sort of consider bad moms or, like, any of the films in that sort of, like, raunch comedy genre to be gender flipped, because they have been until recently roles that are reserved for men. And so it's really frustrating when we just start to get, like, some of these roles opening up for women that studios feel like, oh, you know what we need to do? We need to also make a male version of this. It was like when they announced Ghostbusters and then they were like, oh, P.S., we're going to make a male Ghostbusters, like, or whatever, you know, and there was going to be Channing Tatum and it was that whole thing for a while.
Well, it just kind of feels like an attack, you know, like,
right.
Like somebody, like, has this great idea or whatever, and then they say, oh, but we can do it better. And we can do it better because we'll cast men. And I mean, you know, like, they might not even, like, mean to do it that way, but that's kind of the way it comes off.
It does. And yeah, obviously it's all just, you know, it's a business, right? And it's an industry and they're trying to make money. But it's like, I think the reason that movies like this do really well is because it's something unexpected. So if you want to do something similar for men, like, why not, like, have a film where men get to play roles that are different or, like, unexpected, you know, because if it's the similar thing to Bad Moms, but just with men, like, if it's essentially just like a gender flipped thing, then it's nothing that we haven't seen before. And it's not that that stereotype is any better, but, like, that's not interesting for an audience either, you know, because it's something that we all know, like, we all know that trope, we all know that thing. So, yeah, it's just, like, it's very tedious. But that's Hollywood, so yay.
Well, speaking of things that we might not need, or maybe you're really excited about this, we don't know. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is getting the TV treatment. So that means that you can expect the original film, which was originally starred Kate Winslet and Jim Carrey, to be turned into some kind of TV series. This is kind of interesting, but at the same time, the idea of this story kind of lends itself for a longer format. The movie follows an unhappy couple named Joel and Clementine who decide they're going to erase each other from their memories. And in the movie, you see them cut back and forth between their first meeting and, like, happy days and, like, kind of days where they struggled and stuff like that. And it's kind of all as a means to kind of forget the other ever existed so they can move on with their lives since they're not happy together anymore. So as a TV show, I guess if they're going to focus more on kind of like these, the idea of these flashback memories as they get erased one by one, it does kind of make sense. Although I think the question on everybody's mind is whether or not this can last or go on for, you know, a while, because when you think of a TV show, you think of something that goes on for multiple seasons. So it is going to be interesting to see how they tackle this. The Hollywood Reporter was the first to report this, and they did say that the original movie producer, Steve Golan, is headlining the reboot. So that should be good news for fans of the movie, because it's somebody that was directly involved in the original story kind of coming on board and dealing with this new adaptation. And then Chuck writer Zev Borrow is supposedly in talks to pen the pilot for the script. So that's basically all we know for now. I don't know if you ever saw this movie. Did you see this?
Yeah, I did see it like a long time ago. I can't say I remember it all too well, but I can understand the reasoning behind making this into a TV series. Like, I think that sort of flashback dual storyline thing can lend itself to a TV adaptation, but I would agree it's difficult for me to see how this would be sustained past like one season, because they'll have, like, surely they'll have to introduce other people who have been through this same thing. Like, there'll have to be some crossover, some expansion, because it just can't be, I just can't understand how it would be interesting, because after a while, like, we'll see all the different ways that, you know, that the previous life, or like the memories, intersect with current day. Like, they'll go through all of the different sort of structures for how that can work, and then it will be like, okay, now we're going to do this for another like 20 episodes. Or yeah, I get the desire, but yeah, I don't necessarily know like how it could last.
Yeah, I mean, with things like this, I'm not necessarily opposed to people deciding to adapt, beloved stories into different formats. But I'm also always curious as to why they always say we're doing a TV show and not just say we're doing a mini series. I feel like the mini series needs to get more credit. I feel like more people need to go with mini series.
I totally agree. I mean, obviously it's because they want to like do 10 seasons of it and make like all their money and then retire. But yeah, this definitely feels like something that would be great as a mini series. I completely agree. Like a finite amount of episodes, really well executed, like a kind of character study of the two, of their relationship. I think that could work really well. So yeah, things like this, I agree with you. I'm not inherently opposed to them adapting things, but you wonder if like they're doing it just because they feel like there's a built-in audience, or if they're doing it because they have like a really good take on it, or a really good reason to think that it could work this way.
Okay, so that is it for Eternal Sunshine news. We're going to move in to a tiny little bit more of Harry Potter news. This is the last story of the week, but we felt like it was important to bring it up. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child has, of course, been doing very, very well over in London, and now it looks like we may be seeing it stateside. According to a report filed by the New York Post, it looks like Cursed Child may be coming to Broadway, and it may be inhabiting New York's Al Hirschfeld Theater, which is currently home to Kinky Boots. Kinky Boots has actually been there since April of 2013, but it is possible that Cursed Child will move in as early as next season, so we could be seeing it open in the United States in 2017. Good news for fans that have the means to get out to New York, or people that live in the area over there. But as with other things we've discussed in terms of Cursed Child, still not necessarily accessible to everybody, which is too bad.
Yeah, not a huge surprise.
Right, exactly. I think we always figured it would go to Broadway, but it is interesting that it will be happening as soon as it sounds like it might be. I guess that's the big thing.
Well, I assume that's because they want to like get it on tour, but they need to really take it to Broadway first before they can start doing that. And I wonder if they, do we know if they filmed the West End cast yet?
I have not heard that, but that doesn't mean it hasn't happened.
Yeah, because I wouldn't be surprised if they wanted to get it on Broadway and then tour it, so that then they can like release a DVD or like whatever it is, you know, screen it in cinemas or whatever they decide to do sooner rather than later, while it's still hot, you know, while people still care. Because I think inevitably they will have to do that. Remember when J.K. Rowling was like, "You will see it. It will come to you." And we were like, "Okay, that sounds like a threat." But no worries. Okay, so I guess that's it for news for this week. Bookended by Harry Potter, which seems appropriate. We're gonna jump right into TV show of the week. Pam, you've watched The Crown.
Yes, but not all of it, like you. I've watched 3 episodes. I'm so hooked, though.
How have you been able to stop yourself is the major question I have.
I just, you know what? It's It's by pure necessity that I have had to stop, but I have not wanted to. It's amazing.
Okay, so tell me your thoughts then. Like, what do you like about it? Is there anything you don't like?
You know what? I think, like, so far, I'm just so invested in this idea, and I think that you said this when you were talking about it a couple weeks ago when you started watching, but it's one of those, like, stories that you kind of know, like, enough about, but you're still, like, it's almost like you're seeing it for the first time. And when you think about the fact that, you know, just Queen Elizabeth was stepping in, like, they were breeding her to be a leader when, like, you know, women weren't necessarily supposed to be involved. It's just, like, it's so compelling, the idea. I really specifically liked the scene where she goes to see her father and he's, like, not necessarily telling her that she needs to start stepping it up, but he's kind of, like, trying to bring her into his world and telling her, like, oh, they always hide the stuff at the bottom of the pile, so you need to flip it over and read the things they don't want you to read and things like that. So it is really interesting to kind of see her go from kind of like a figurehead to somebody that is actually taking action. And I think it's quite lovely. I love Matt Smith's portrayal.
Isn't he great?
Yeah, he's so great in it. I love everything about this so far. I'm so excited to watch more.
Oh, I'm so glad you like it. I mean, I thought you would, but I'm really glad that you like it. I just finished it, actually, and now people on Twitter have been very mad at me. But guys, like, it's out at the start of November. It's not that long. And now you know to watch it because I've reviewed it for you. And Selena is still going to be writing recaps and reviews on Hyperbole, so you'll be able to read those soonish, I guess. Those will be coming out, so you'll be able to, you know, see what she thinks. I loved it. The last two episodes, you know, it's interesting given what you just said, because towards the end of the season, it definitely dealt with some things that I was, like, more familiar with, like, more major events that I was like, oh, I understand where this is going. And I still felt that, like, on the edge of my seat kind of suspense that I think this show does really well, of you being like, what's going to happen next? Like, what could possibly happen? Which is hilarious because it's a historical show about things that have already happened in history.
That's like, that's like watching Hamilton and not realizing that, you know, or like getting to the end of the first song and hearing Aaron Burpee say, like, and me, I'm the damn fool that shot him. And you're like, wait, what?
And you're like, spoilers.
Spoilers, Aaron. Jeez.
Yeah, spoilers, Bear. I really loved it, guys. And I will be really interested to hear what people say. I think I said last week, like, I really want to know what anyone, like, any British listeners, viewers think of it, because I think that's really going to change people's perspective on it. But I think American audiences are going to love it. And I want to watch it again. Like, oh, it's just so good.
Also, the sets and the clothing, like, the costumes are so beautiful. Oh my gosh, everything. It's just such a beautifully shot piece of television.
Yeah, you can see where the money is going in this. And it's just so lush, like, everything about it. It's so great. And Claire Foy, who plays Queen Elizabeth, is just phenomenal and only gets better towards the end of the season. Like, she gets a moment in the penultimate episode that just killed me a little bit. And I'm pretty sure you will know it when you get to it. Like, I think everyone will know it when they get to it. It's, you know, it's like a kind of a major moment for her. But she's just so, I don't know. She's just so understated, but in a really, like, magnificent kind of way. And Matt Smith gets to be a little more over the top just because of the character that he's playing, but she has to be a little more subdued. But she plays it so well, and there's so much happening there just under the surface. And I can't say enough good things about this series. I really, really liked it. And, you know, there's a lot to think about in it. There's definitely things in it that, I mean, there's not even things in it that I feel like they did poorly or anything. You know, I think I said last time, like, it's very much representative of the period that it presents. So, you know, there's, like, a lot of class issues and race issues and gender issues in it, but, like, those are all accurate to the period.
And but like you, I would really love, like, when this comes out, especially if you're one of our listeners from England or, you know, anywhere in the UK, I would really love to hear what you guys have to say about this if you end up watching it, because you'll have a perspective that, like, us three would not have on it.
So. Yeah, definitely. Especially because, you know, the royal family is, again, like, very divisive. And the outsider perspective is always going to be very different than, you know, it would be, it's like whenever they make a film about, like, American president, and Americans have a very different perspective on that to other people. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think here it's just, like, the idea of the monarchy is so romanticized. And I think the closest we ever got to, like, American royalty was probably, like, the Kennedys and Camelot and things like that. But it's completely different. So we only see one side. It's way different if you like, are living in the place where this is taking place.
Yeah, exactly. So I will say, I mean, the one thing I will say is that I think, you know, it is a very positive portrayal of the royal family and of, I mean, not of all the members, but of certain members of the royal family. Like, but I mean, how can it not be? Because Netflix needs you to buy into their story. So if you think that they're all terrible and you hate them all, like, you're not going to want to keep watching this. So that makes sense to me, but I can see how that might bother some viewers. So yeah, I'll be very interested to hear what people think, and I'll be interested to read what Selena thinks about it when she finishes it. And yeah, I'm gonna, you know, we will have to do a special or something about this, because I want to be able to talk about it in proper detail and talk about spoilers and stuff once everyone has had the chance to watch it. And you've been watching something else. Is this that this is the other thing that I kept seeing in the screeners package on Netflix?
Well,
is that
why,
what that is?
I watched it. Yeah. So Miranda Sings of internet / YouTube fame has a TV show that's now out. It actually came out on the 14th on Netflix. It's called Haters Back Off. And if you're familiar with Miranda Sings, then you're going to be very familiar with the brand of humor that Colleen Ballinger brings to her character. I will say that, like, I enjoy some of the Miranda content, but I'm not sure if, like, a 30-minute dose of Miranda is for me. But I think that if you are hardcore Murfanda, as it were, you've probably really been enjoying this. But it does have some really funny moments. I think that what took me out of it originally is like that, you know, on the internet, on YouTube, Miranda is a character that has existed for many, many years. And here, the story starts where she's kind of trying to become famous because she's so good at everything, like, or she thinks she's so good at everything. So it took me out of the experience a little bit to think that, like, none of that has happened yet, supposedly. And yeah.
Oh, so it's like a prequel?
But I think that what is really cool is that it does kind of bring you into this, this home life that they have created for her. So you have, like, her uncle, who is, you know, her uncle is mentioned a lot in the Miranda content on YouTube, and he's kind of like her manager. He wants to help her become a star. And then you have her sister, who is, like, so rooted in reality that it's, like, this contrast between, like, how crazy Miranda is versus, like, her sister, who's, like a normal teenage girl and just, like, you know, at times, like, very embarrassed by what her sister is doing and things like that. I think that the dynamic works really well. And then her mom is kind of, like, off doing her own thing. So it is, like, when it's good, it's good. But I think, like, for me, and maybe for some other casual fans, it might be too, like, it is different, like, going from watching somebody be this character for, like, 4 minutes on YouTube versus, like, 30 minutes. So I would say it's not for everybody, but I think that fans will love it. And if you have not been introduced to, like, you know, her brand of humor, you might find something else that you're into. It's all going to depend. It's very much, I think it's going to polarize audiences, kind of, basically. So you're either going to love it or you're not.
I saw a show of hers once, actually, in Australia.
Did you like it?
Yeah, a friend took me. It was really good, actually. She does half the show in character. Like, she does half the show as Miranda, and then she does half the show as, what's her name, Colleen? As herself, because she's actually a great singer. And, you know, you need to be able to pull off, like, the bad singer thing that she's doing. Like, you need to be able to do it well to be able to do it badly. And she's very funny. So yeah, I enjoyed that. I thought it was fun, but I can see how, I don't know if again, like, that kind of humor, I could be invested in it for 30 minutes. So,
yeah. And I think too, what it comes down to is, like I said, I think I wasn't, I don't know why, but I wasn't expecting what this was. I think to me, it really is reminiscent of Napoleon Dynamite. Just the idea of like this person existing in suburbia. And I kind of thought it was going to be more like what her YouTube channel is. And it is an extension of that, but it's not, because it kind of erases the fact that she is famous on the internet.
Yeah. So it's like the same character, but in a different story.
Right. Okay. I also want to preface this by saying that I've only watched 4 episodes, so it might change like towards the end. Like maybe she is more like what she is online. But I will say that like she was just on Jimmy Fallon, Colleen, and she's like, she's so funny. So funny. And at one point Jimmy asks her to become Miranda. So she like does it like in 2 seconds, and then just to watch her completely change, you know, from like Colleen the person to like Miranda is just like, she's so talented. And she is like, she's so funny. So if this is not for you and you check it out, I would highly recommend just going to see some of the other stuff that she's done on YouTube, because she's very talented in her own right. She also did an episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Yes. Which is so funny.
It's so funny. So yeah. So if you just like, it's one of those things where it's like, check it out if you want. And if you've never like experienced Miranda Sings and you're like, maybe she's not as funny as I think she is, go check out some of the YouTube stuff, because it completely changes like your entire perspective. And maybe go check her out live, because Marima had a good time, so.
Yeah, and we all know that I hate everything. One thing that I do not hate is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but this week I had to watch New Girl because there was a crossover episode. And first of all, I spoiled myself on New Girl by watching like the episode of New Girl, because I haven't watched New Girl since like season 2. And I was like, oh, Schmidt and Cece are married. Okay, like that's a thing that obviously happened at some point in the last like 3 seasons that I didn't watch. So then I was annoyed that New Girl spoiled me on New Girl, but I guess if I didn't want to be spoiled, I shouldn't have watched an episode of New Girl. I didn't love the crossover, I have to say. The Brooklyn Nine-Nine episode was fine, but it wasn't the best, and the New Girl episode just reminded me why I don't watch New Girl anymore. I don't know if you are watching it, but like those characters are just... although I really like Schmidt and Cece, so now I'm like, maybe I should go watch it again. But no, I the rest of the characters I find kind of grating. So there was that. And then also the new episode of Mindy, which I'm very into this season. She has kind of a new love interest guy who I like. And, yeah, there's like some interesting stuff with the sort of side characters. Mindy Project does such a great job of like fleshing out all of the characters. Like it is obviously, you know, a piece of Mindy Kaling, but it's like such a great ensemble piece at the same time. Like the reason it's funny is always because of all the characters. Like I laugh at them as much as I laugh at her every week. And it's, so it's fun to see them getting to do a little more. And yeah, I would recommend. I'm very into Mindy. And this is good because, like, I talked about it last week, I think. And it's good because it reminds me, like, oh, I need to watch Mindy again to talk about on Hype. So this way I'm not getting behind. All right. So I think that's it for TV Show of the Week. Let's jump into our listener feedback. Do you want to grab that first comment?
Of course. This is from Raven, who says, does anybody watch the show Baby Daddy on Freeform? I've been watching it on Netflix and it's really fun. I've never watched original programming on ABC Family/Freeform, so I was surprised at how good the writing is. It's a lighthearted show and seriously gives off Friends vibes. It's pretty diverse and has a lot of heart. It's also really funny. I lol every episode, especially at the characters played by Taj Mari, Tia and Tamir's little brother from Sister Sister, and Melissa Peterman, Barbara Jean from Reba. And when their characters team up, it's hilarious. They're on their 6th season, but I've never heard anyone talk about it. I highly recommend Baby Daddy if you're looking for an easy, fun show. Well, Raven, I've heard of Baby Daddy, but I've never watched it. But just for you, I'll go watch an episode sometime this week or next week.
I've literally never heard of this. How have there been 6 seasons of it before?
I feel like Freeform is its own little, like, continent almost in terms of, like, television. And it's, you know what? Honestly, like, in all honesty, it takes me so long to jump on Freeform/ABC Family shows. Like, I didn't watch Greek until, like, Greek was over.
Oh my god, was Greek on Freeform?
Greek is on, well, Greek is free. Yeah, it's on the Freeform app, I think, right now, like, the whole series.
Well, then I should watch this, same with, because Greek is the best show I've made, probably, yeah. I don't know.
Same with Pretty Little Liars, like, it took me forever to like, watch, like, 4 seasons, 5 seasons of that, so I don't know what it is. I think it's just out of sight, out of mind, kind of like MTV content. I just kind of forget about it.
That's true. If you want to leave us a comment like Raven, of course, you can find this podcast post on hyperball.com and leave us a comment there. Or you can send us a tweet. We are at HyperballHype on Twitter. Or you can send us an email like some people did that we're about to get to. They emailed us hype@hyperball.com. And Naomi was one of those people. She says, hey, Hyperball/Marima. Oh, that's me. Loved your discussion about the parallels. Okay, I promise I did not choose this one because it was complimentary of me, but I'm going to read it anyway. Loved your discussion about the parallels between Grindelwald and Hitler. That's definitely the first thing I thought about when I heard the plot of the second movie. I'm also really excited to see how/if they deal with developing anti-Semitism in both North America and Europe, as it is likely that both Tina and Queenie will be Jewish. I think pre-World War II Europe would be a great plot arc for the franchise and put JKR in her historic knowledge wheelhouse. Love the show, Naomi. Yeah, I think Tina and Queenie have been confirmed as Jewish.
I like Teeny and Queenie.
Yeah, Teeny and Queenie. that sounds like a ship name though, and they're sisters, so like that's weird. I think they're confirmed as Jewish. So yeah, this is something that really interests me as well. Because I guess like it interests and vaguely concerns me. Like I am hesitant about the portrayal of World War II in like fantasy films and things that might use like an allegory for Nazism without actually pointing it out. And because Fantastic Beasts is dealing so specifically with like the nomad world, there isn't really a way to avoid, if they're doing like the Grindelwald arc, as a lot of people seem to think they will be over the 5 films, they have to talk about Hitler, right? Like they have to draw that parallel. But then, I mean, they're talking about essentially segregation and they're not drawing a racial parallel. So yeah, I'm really glad you pointed out, Naomi. I've definitely been thinking about this. The more we hear about Grindelwald's role in this. Also, side note, I thought it was Grindelwald, like German. But they say Grindelwald in that sizzle reel.
Well, you know what's going to happen in like 10 years, Joe's going to say, actually, it's Grindelwald.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to be like, Joe, you had your chance. This is from Mark, who says, hello, I really liked the Fantastic Beasts theme. It's not iconic yet, but I think it could change once I've seen the film and can see the images inside my head. That's usually how it works for me with soundtracks. Speaking of Potter, on October 29th, there's going to be a Potter marathon here in the Netherlands in 5 cities. All 8 movies back to back. It will take about 22 hours in total. It starts at 11 a.m. and ends at 9 a.m. the next morning. Wish me luck. I hope I can stay awake. Wow. That's crazy.
Good luck, Mark. We wish you well.
Right, right. Well, Mark also said that via Twitter, he wrote in to us there as well, twitter.com/hypeablehype if you're interested. He said, I went to the Doctor Strange preview earlier this evening. The footage is 15 minutes. They showed it. They showed and it was amazing. Must see in IMAX. So there's another rec from Mark. That movie is coming out. I forgot it was coming out so soon, but it comes out like in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's still really racist, so I'm not that into it. But yeah, I'm like, no. You know what? I'll be interested to hear what people think of it. And I'm sure I'll see it at some point, but like, can't say it's high on my list. Okay. Oh, wow. I'm getting all of the tweets directed at me. We had a tweet from Christina who says, Re Makuza, which is the name that we are calling it, apparently. As a modern history undergrad in Scotland, I'd say that Brit historical issues exist in the original series too. So this is in regard to our conversation last week about how J.K. Rowling is perhaps stumbling over some of the American history that she's representing. So thank you so much, Christina, for letting us know. I like I said, not really my area. So I was like very curious to hear. I guess that should make me feel better, but it just makes me kind of roll my eyes.
Okay, Blaze says, thanks for talking about 8 Days a Week. This is for Selena, who, of course, recommended the Beatles documentary last week. I saw it when it came out, and I loved it. I'm a huge Beatles fan. So excited for the live-action Mulan. I would really be into a live-action Aladdin as well. I think that would be awesome. I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Mindy. Totally was not expecting what happened in Mindy either. Excited to see what happens next.
Yes. Thank you for the appreciation of me actually watching TV. I feel very vindicated. Okay, we want to give a shout out to Paley Lewis, who tweeted us with an amazing picture of a hype sweater and said, I saw this sweater and I had to get it because of you guys. I think we retweeted it. Not that we are favorites, but you're definitely our favorite.
Right, right. Show us all your, unlicensed hype merch, guys. We want to see more. If you find things with the word hype on it,
we should have like a t-shirt or something. I wonder if people would be into that. I want a hype t-shirt.
Tweet it and let us know if you'd buy a hype t-shirt. Yeah. Okay. No, but in all seriousness, like, this sweater is really cute. It's got like this floral pattern. Like really Merma said, we tweeted it out. Good job. Good eye, Paley.
Yeah. This is not sponsored, but if they would like to sponsor us, please get in touch. Hype@hypeable.com.
All right, we have one last tweet here from Yannick, who says, definitely jumping on the Teen Wolf season 6 bandwagon with Selena. Also, bring on the Teen Wolf WTF is going on hype specials. May I suggest with guests the character history section? Having only watched season 1 and 3, I'll definitely join in with some crazy listener feedback.
That's amazing. An entire podcast of people talking about Teen Wolf who have not seen all of Teen Wolf.
I think that actually we would piss people off and maybe make them laugh a little bit. By the way, side note, a very, very long time ago, Selena wrote this article called Everything I Learned About Teen Wolf. I know about Teen Wolf, I learned from pop culture.
And is that the one with the great pictures?
Yeah, she drew. It's so funny. I'm laughing just thinking about it.
We'll have to.
She like drew it. These. Mm-hmm. She drew these like illustrations of like what she was talking about, and like all of her assumptions are made from like things she's read on Twitter, what she's heard in passing, and just like, you know, things like that. So it's really great. We have a couple of articles along that same vein over on hypeable.com, but Selena's Teen Wolf one is definitely among my favorite.
I think Selena's was the first article. Like, we had a whole bunch in that series of, you know, everything I learned about this, I learned from pop culture or whatever, but I'm pretty sure Selena's was the first one. And she drew like this little comic thing to go with it. And it was hysterically funny. We'll have to dig that out and we'll tweet it on our Twitter, which is @hypeablehype. So you guys can head over there to find it, and we'll put it in the show notes.
It could be our TV Teen Wolf, you know?
Oh my God. So good. I love that. I love that. Hashtag we've coined it. You heard it here first, et cetera, et cetera. We'll put that on the back of our hype t-shirts just for no reason. Just to confuse everyone. Okay, so that's it for Hype for this week. We had a lot of news to get through, and it ended up being a lot about Harry Potter, but I somehow don't think you guys will mind. So we'll be back next week, as always. For those people who have been listening to our Gilmore Girls specials, never fear, season 6 is on the way. Like we said, Selena's been a little sick, so once she is better and has got her way through season 6, we will get onto that, and I promise you will have all of the specials before the revival hits Netflix. Even if that means it's the 24th of November when they go up, like they will come your way. So do not worry. So yeah, if you've been watching Gilmore Girls, make sure to tweet us or send us your feedback on season 6. You can continue to laugh at Selena for her ridiculous predictions, although her predictions have been getting better. And yeah, we'll be back next week with our normal show. And if you've been enjoying Hype, don't forget you can always leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We would really appreciate it. It's how people find out about the show and we find new listeners. And it's just a nice thing to do. You know, it's good karma. So why not do that? That would be super nice. So until next time, I'm Marima.
And I'm Pamela.
that was hype. Oh, it feels weird to go first.
What?
Like, to say my name first feels weird.
Oh, yeah, because you're always like, and I'm Marima.
And I'm Marima. I feel like I should have made you go first anyways, just to be like. Oh,
that would have been so funny. It's like, thanks for listening to Hype. I'm Pamela.
And I'm Marima. Okay.
So the I would end. Say, like, to do the 80s outro, like, you know, like, TV in the 80s, they had, like, the really long credits.
Oh, no. I was not alive then.
Early 90s, too.
Yeah, they were.